The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You're listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, hey, everybody. My name is Tony Lightfoot, and this is the latest edition of the TWBC podcast. Great to have you on board. And we've got a real special episode, a real treat coming up for you, because on the back of his latest win on the Waterski Pro Tour, I have the distinct pleasure of talking to Jonathan Travers. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, great, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Excellent stuff. Excellent stuff. So it's been a while. Getting your latest win. I mean, you your last professional win was at the Masters some 11 or so years ago, and you may have had one or two professional victories, but I mean, this one's been a long time in coming, hasn't it?
Yeah, for sure. It's, I believe Mateo said that was my sixth time going to the San Gervasio tournament, and I made the podium a few times, and it's just hard to be at that level throughout a whole event. And this year it's been 5 weekends, so it's been a great pleasure to get on the top again.
Now beyond the first couple of rounds, everything was smooth sailing, but then it came down to the head-to-head quarterfinals, and you didn't get offered to the best of situations. Kind of tell us how it happened from your point of view.
Yeah, I had my first round in that head-to-head, and I was running a really nice 10-7, and I got to 5-ball, and I had changed the 5 and felt something weird in the rope, and I said, okay, it's my onside, just take it easy through here. And at the finish of that turn, I kind of fell back, and the rope snapped.
So you could actually start to feel it in the rope as you were making that crossing from four to five, or even a little bit beforehand, huh?
Yeah, I was off the second wake right when I did the edge change. I just felt this little something weird in the rope, like a knot tightening or a little pop, and that's when I was like, okay.
Something that generated slack in the rope a little bit, just a little bit there.
Yeah, exactly. And it was just something there that I was like, okay, that's not normal. Take it easy here. And then next thing I know, I'm sitting in the water, still holding my handle, and I kept pulling the rope in.
With a whole bunch of rope in your hands, you know. So, I mean, it obviously must have threw you off a little bit, you know. But, I mean, you got the victory in that in that quarterfinal, and you went on to another couple of rounds, and ended off being on top of the podium, you know. So obviously one of the first people you got on the phone to was Natty and your son, you know. So tell us, what was that experience like?
Yeah, coming back to the dock, and Jamie called my wife and my son Alex right away, and it was a really special moment. It's been hard this year to be away for 5 weeks when you have a four-year-old, but it was just a moment there that I was just like, wow, it's true. And my little son was just like, daddy, you won, and it was just so special. And you know, hopefully he remembers that, and he's pretty young, so it's gonna be hard for him, but it was just a really special moment.
I think quite a few other people will remember that. I mean, especially as you hinted upon, that Jamie had actually made the call to your wife and son, you know. So I mean, you didn't have to go through all that mess of just tapping in the number or going on speed dial, what have you, you know. But I mean, it was already there. So I mean, tell us a little bit about the team environment that is Syndicate.
Yeah, Team Syndicate has always been a special team, but in the last year and a half, having Rob, Will, Jamie, Sasha, Allie Nicholson has been very special. Most of us ski together every day, and it's just beating Will wasn't really beating Will. It's going out there and just skiing with your buddy, and he was as happy for me as I would have been for him. And Will said basically when we got back in, he's like, hey, if I'm going to lose a tournament, it's always good to lose to your teammate. So it made me feel even more special that him and I were on the podium together, which hasn't happened very often just because of the fact that he always beats me in the head-to-head rounds. But it's just having a team and that actually cares about each other is something that I think a lot of people in our sport don't have, and it's something that I don't know if it's Dave at HO or Marcus or John Mommer when he was with us that kind of put that together, or if it's just ourselves, but to have that is something very special, and I hope other people in the industry see that and they can grow their teams to be something like Syndicate.
Yeah, and I think Will said as much when I got the chance to do like a post-performance interview right next to the announcing position, which is, funnily enough, where we are conducting this interview from now. We're looking over at the lakes, lake behind us here at the Queenbury Lake, the home of the Oxford Wakeboard and Ski Club, and you hear that sound in the background. We're right in on the opening turn in towards the course, you know, so... You've spent a little bit of time over at Hazelwood Ski World, as has the Syndicate crew. How's your training been like prior to this Oxfordshire pro-am?
Yeah, it was really good getting to go hang out with the Hazelwoods and the Ashers, and Rob was there, and Jamie and Will, Ali Garcia, and it was just a really good fun time to kind of get away from everyone and just go have a family meals and just go out on the lake and at the Hazelwoods. You know, it's another name that's huge in the sport, and to be able to go out there and have George and 80 Asher sitting there and driving us, and you know, it's just special. I didn't ski too much this week. After that fall at San Gervasio, and I was a little sore, so I was like, hey, rest might be smart getting ready for the big weekend here. So, but I did take some sets up there and I felt really good, and I'm stoked to be here and stoked to be at a new site. You know, we don't get to go to many new sites, so it's cool to see Oxford stepping up and putting on a cool event. And I just found out this week that it's at night. So, that's something. I guess I didn't do my research very well, but that's kind of exciting. We don't get to do many night skiing events, so you know, hopefully our team can get all the way through that and be able to all perform at night.
Maybe the closest that you get is skiing towards dusk or the last set of the day after pulling a whole bunch of ski school work.
Totally, yeah.
Okay, so kind of what hurts a little bit after that fall, you know?
Yeah, I'm a little beat up from just, I don't know, skiing a lot in my ears, but mainly just my shoulder blades, just trying to take that hit and then the handle coming into my chest and just, you know, you get that upper shoulder trap and into the shoulders. But I rest for 2 days, took a few sets, felt really good, and I'm here. I'm ready to go.
All right, excellent stuff. So, I mean, like we just alluded to, you were training over at Hazelwoods along with the rest of the Syndicate crew. You know, in this part of the world, I mean, that's pretty much the lick to go to. You know, if you want to get some hardcore training done in this part of the world. So do you see similarities and differences that exist between your site over in Groveland, Florida, and what they've got established over in Lincoln?
Yeah, totally. The Hazelwoods is the home of the Headwind, and I heard that, so... Maybe, I don't know when it was, 10 years ago or so when Will and I started skiing together, I put another jump in my main lake just to say we always have a headwind too. So we're always competing against each other. We're always learning from each other.
They didn't have Instagram back then, and they barely had Facebook, so they couldn't smack talk each other online nearly as much as you can these days.
Yeah, totally. But it's going there is like kind of going to a real professional site where you know everything's going to be set up. George and 80 are working on the course every single day. They're making sure the buoys are in the right spot because it's a four cable course. And it's very professional. They're always making sure the boats are perfect. They have SurePath there every in the boat, ready to go. You know, they have Splash Eye for the jumpers set up 24/7. It's just, you know, it's just a place that if you have a site or you want to be in that same league, it's a good place to go check out if you're from Europe, for sure.
Certainly, and obviously getting round to your place over in Groveland, Florida is the place to be once you make your way over to the Sunshine State, which is also the site to a number of tournaments, such as the World Championships, you know, that have been held the past couple of times, you know, and that's going to be a little bit of a strange feeling, you know, when you know, if and when the World Championship venue is going to be released, you know, it's probably a good safe bet that it's not going to be at Jack's. I think Lalani and Jack will go spare if they have to end up hosting another World Championships free on the bounce.
Yeah, I would love to say we could do it, but it's a very, very hard task. It's not easy. Tell you the truth, without my mom, it would have never happened. It's just the hours she put in that office, sitting there, getting Lake County, getting all the sponsors, and working with IWWF, and working with all the venues, and the opening ceremonies, closing ceremonies, everything on site. It's just insane what one person can actually do. Back in the day when I started this pro level scheme, is we had the elite ranking list, kind of like the pro tours right now. We have the,
yeah.
Yeah. And we took the top 7 from that in the world, points, and they got their invitation to the Masters. And then we had an LCQ, where you took the one person that won that event or did the score of that event to the Masters.
So you'd welcome a return to the way that it was done before COVID, right?
100%. And I would even take the world ranking list. You know, take the top 7 on the world ranking list and then have a single LCQ tournament. And let's go back to how, and bring the prestige of that event back, where, like what we're doing right now, 5 weeks in Europe, 5 or 6 tournaments, most of them on the pro tour, and really drive the sport to where it should be and have motivation for the kids to come to Europe and do what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And that's what drove me. I said, hey, when I started this, there was a World Cup. And I'm like, how do I get in the World Cup? That is the coolest thing we have right now. I want to do the World Cup. And it's like, you got to go to Pro Events to get a certain amount of points to get to the World Cup.
To be eligible to be in the World Cup.
Exactly. And then the World Cup fell out. And then we had, okay, how do you get in the Masters? Well, the same kind of thing. You have to go to a Pro Events to get a certain amount of points to be in the top 7 to go to the Masters. Well, now they're pushing for people not to go to Pro Events, not to do the Pro Tour, and just to go to their LCQ tournaments or MLCQ.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a, in my opinion, it's kind of like a monopoly where May is a Nautique month and they want us to go pay multiple entry fees for no cash prize to try to qualify for their Masters, to pay another $360 to go ski there.
It's just crazy pants.
Well, then another thing that no one's really thought of is you qualify the weekend before the Masters. There's no hotels available. There's no houses available. Everything's outrageously expensive, because if you could book it in January when you already know you're in, or December or November, you have options.
And I mean, it's hard enough to find a tent.
Yeah.
around that area. I know, I've tried.
So it's like, yeah, and it's just hard to hurt and talk about a company that does so much for our sport, but after 14 years being an athlete and they don't listen, it's kind of not fair to the athletes, and it's not fair to the team that they call a team when they don't have meetings and talk to us and understand our side of things.
Do you think a lot of that is due to that boat company's distraction with other on water competitive action?
Tony, I don't know that. I don't know. I think it's to do with the Masters Committee. I think it has to do with big names of ski schools that are sponsored by Nautique that think that they don't want their kids to travel, or they don't want their kids to be in Europe for 5 weeks doing these pro tour stops and, you know, doing the things that those people we did in the past. And I don't know where it's going to go, but I hope me talking now kind of says something to them that says, hey, maybe we should get the team together, talk to them, understand what pro athletes want. Because at the end of the day, if the athletes boycott, just say, the LCQ series, there's no Masters athletes.
Yeah.
And I know they did that back in the day where all the slalom skiers didn't show up at the Masters except for Andy and Jeff, and they were both Nautique athletes.
Hmm.
So I don't think that's going to happen today, because it's not the same kind of level it was in the 80s. But I think there needs to be a big change for sure, because there's the new up-and-coming kids, which is very sad, because when I was a young kid, the Masters was, like, one of the biggest things. And now I'm hearing from some people that are like, we don't want to go to the Masters. We get there. If you do this, this, you miss this, you don't do that, you don't ski. You know,
yeah,
it's like...
And you have to satisfy an upper score threshold from the year before you could even consider being in the MLCQ.
Yeah, exactly. And you have people that... When my dad, actually, I just found this out. My dad's the one that went to Nautique way back, early 90s, maybe even late 80s. Jim Clooney was telling me this, that Jim was the first one to ever qualify at the LCQ for a Masters. And he went out to the Masters and broke the world record and didn't make the finals. But he was telling me, or my dad, I went to my dad after and I asked him, I was like, hey, what's that all about? And he's like, yeah, my whole goal with that was, is the person that trains the hardest throughout the winter and like works their tail off could have the opportunity to be better than the skiers at the Masters. So why don't we give one person a shot to qualify the weekend before to go to the Masters and showcase what they can do? And that helped me a lot, because I qualified the original LCQ when they, in the beginning, it was you had to run a certain score.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always 3 or 4 at 41. I think I did it like 6 times. And
that got you no closer.
Well, that got me a free ticket to the Masters.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, the year in 2011 when I won it, I actually qualified the weekend before.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of times when you train all winter and you get stronger and you get ski shape and you stay in it and you work your tail off and you're actually better than the guys from the year before, because they already know that they're into the first tournament of the year. Right, so they don't work as hard as you did, and then you come in and you're like a firecracker and you're on it. And I think if we can get back to something in that category where we have a list, if it's a world ranking list or if it's a pro tour list or if it's whatever list they want to use, but if they announce it at the Masters for the following year, so you have the whole year to aim for something. That's where I think the prestige of the event will be huge for the juniors, for the open skiers. People will be more happy to go there when you're not trying to scramble on Monday after the last LCQ. Hey, where am I going to stay?
Yeah.
You know, the hotel's $500 a night that's on site, or the villas are all booked. You know, some people are staying in Pine Mountain at the Hotel 8 or whatever, Motel 8, where it's... That's not a quality rest for the biggest event.
No, certainly, you know? Not. Yeah, so the mattresses are lumpy.
Yeah, and it's just... So that there, I think, is a little bit of the history of the Masters and where I would love to see it go, because I love Callaway. I love that event. I think it's the coolest thing. This year, not making it, I still went up there and did my job of doing the jump and bringing the jump home. And, you know, I love it. I think I've only missed 2 in my whole entire life.
All right, then. So obviously we've gone through a lengthy discussion over the Masters and your situation that played out this time around, but there were some great events that followed this year, including Morocco.
Yeah, Morocco.
You got not only to ski, but you also got to survey.
Yeah, it was a pleasure when Vince asked me to come TC the first pro event in Africa, and I was like, dude, I'm in. I'm 100%. I don't care if I ski or not. I'm in for this. And to go there and watch Will run 41 and to ski well, it was a pleasure to be there, but it was so much fun to go to this beautiful lake. I couldn't believe what the guy who owns the lake, what he's done to that site with the shorelines, and everything was just perfect. And
imagine when that thing is got houses around it.
Yeah, it's going to be beautiful. And people probably didn't notice this on webcast, but there's 7,000 trees planted on that property.
Mm-hmm.
And 1,000 of them are only for wind protection, and the 6,000 are like a high-end cocoa tree. So the lake is it's the first time I ever skied on a real ski lake with a pond liner. It was like a pool.
It is. It is essentially the world's largest swimming pool, as I mentioned enough times during the telecast.
Yeah, it was amazing. So, yeah, it was just good. And you know, Will helped me out there a lot doing the TC stuff, and Jamie Bull helped me, and it was just a a good feeling to be somewhere where everyone was happy, everyone wanted to be there, everyone skied well.
I mean, the hotel enough was amazing.
Food. I've never seen that much food in my life. You know, so it was just, and to be there and hold vipers on your shoulders and kind of just be somewhere where you never would have gone if it wasn't for Vince and TWBC and the site owner and Camille and his father, and you know, it was just amazing.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. We certainly look forward to being a part of next year's festivities. I mean, we got a pretty good commitment that that we'll be there a bit, at around about the same time next year. Now, Don Martin, that didn't quite end up to your liking. Kind of tell us a little bit about that.
Don Martin, I haven't been there for a few years, and I showed up there, didn't even take a practice ride. My first round, I ran 4:41, and I came in with a grin on my face thinking I was going to run 41 this tournament. And the next round I run 3:41. It was one of the first times in a while that I came into the second round still. I was top seed going into the second round, and then at the end of the second round when I was still on the dock, I was Brando tied me at 4, so I had to beat his backup score to stay in to stay top seed. And I went out there and ran 3:41. I was like, okay, I feel pretty good. I'm stoked for this final. And I go out there and run 3:41 in the final, top seed or second to seed, and I tied the rest of the group. And I was just so bummed because I was skiing so well. I knew I could have. I came into three ball so early, and I just brain farted, and I didn't quite get out to 4. So I was in a runoff, and then in the runoff, I got drawn last. And I knew that Will ran, I believe, 3 again.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And Cole, I believe, ran 2. And Brando, I think, ran 3. And I'm like, okay, I got to get the 4 ball.
Yeah, hook or by
hook. Or maybe Will ran 4, maybe. I was like, I got to get really deep in this. And I came around the island, and a little gust of wind hit me, and I pulled out super hard on the gate. And I came out of 1 perfect, and I came in a 2 ball, and I said, okay, now I'm Will. Got to turn this as hard as I can. And the ski blew, and the rope went under my ski, and I thought it was above my ski, so I picked the handle up above my head to just get the handle away from me.
Mm-hmm.
But then it fell between my feet, and my back foot fell in the handle.
Ouch.
Yeah, hurt that foot, then it wrapped around my front leg. And then the ski went away from me. Everything was fine. I look at my leg, Tony, and it's white. And I just thought it was the bone sticking out. It hurt.
Ouch.
I broke my ankle 5 times. That was like, at that moment, 5 times more pain than I've ever had in my ankles. So I was like, my bone sticking out my leg. So I just yelled. The boat came back. I jumped in the boat with adrenaline. I said, go to the dock. And I get to the dock. And at that moment, I didn't know because I was just in so much pain. But Will Asher and Sasha DeCons walked down to the dock and saw the whiteness on my leg, and they both turned around and walked away. And then Will's like, no, I need to be there for him. And he jumped in the boat and gave me a hug and just squeezed me and said, you're going to be all right. You're going to be all right. And then my other foot, my right foot on the top, all the metal tarsals, I thought were broken.
Wow.
So they rushed me to the hospital. Sasha went with me to be my translator and help me out there. Did x-rays. Everything was fine. But I've had a pretty big wound on my left front leg since then, and it's finally starting to look better. I had to get some antibiotics because it was getting a little infected at a few events. It was yellow pus dripping down my leg, and my right foot's been all right. If I stay off of it, it feels pretty good. But all that, my family always says, if John gets hurt, he's going to ski better. So it just drove me to ski better and be stronger and focus a little bit more. And yeah, it's been fun.
And it ended up the case being the case about 2 weeks later. But in between, I think, with the Monaco slalom competition, then Botas afterwards. But I mean, you're one of the folks that was in close proximity to that leg break from Freddie Winter. You know, I mean, that's a reality check, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. I feel for Fred. Hope you heal up, buddy. That was a moment that was really scary. Kind of when Freddie came out of, I believe it was 4 ball at 41, and he kind of got out of position and kind of flew off the wakes, and his back foot came out. The place went silent. And when he hit that dock, to have people, Greg, first one there, drop his camera and just run and hold him and be there in the water for 20 minutes until the ambulance got there. It was a scary moment. And I'm just happy that it happened in a place where they had a really good surgeon on hand, and Fred will be back. I've talked to him a little bit. I saw a video of him walking on his crutches. So,
yeah, I saw pictures of him.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thank God for that. And but I didn't have the best tournament at that event. I got food poisoning for the second year in a row there.
What?
Yeah, it was a rough night between first round and second round. And my wife actually was there, and she was like, hey, should we go to the hospital? I'm like, I already been once. I don't need to go twice. And I got through it, and we went off to Spain after that. And I had a great event there, too. I skied really well, not well enough to push myself up on the podium, but I skied against Will in the first round of head-to-head at Botas's. And ski against Will is hard. Right now, he's dominant. He's the top skier out there right now. And I heard Nate say, I think it was his 15th year maybe or something like that, and he's like, when I came into the sport, the person to beat was Will. It's still Will.
So absolutely,
to get beat by your best friend and your teammate sucks, but at least your teammate and your best friend's moving on. And I was gutted when I came in after that set, because I felt good. I felt like everything was trying to work out for me, and I just trying to get out of two balls of lefties so difficult sometimes, and it just didn't work out.
And of course it brought us to San Gervasio. Patience being its own reward, you got the victory there, so you've already gotten one tour win of the season. Rob Hazel has got a couple, and then you've got Will Asher with a whole slew of others, you know. Based by comparison with those guys, I mean, what's going to be your objective from now until the end of the season?
Kind of just stay with our team's doing, driving forward, focusing on one event at a time, being aggressive, being strong, being fit, being smart. It's fun to fly to all these events, and you're sitting beside Will on the plane, and we're looking at the webcast and going over what we did. And, you know, after, I believe it was after Morocco, we sat on the plane, and we're looking at my skiing, and Will's like, dude, just do this a little bit better, do that a little bit better. And then it just started clicking, you know, because when you travel, your time frame's all messed up. Everything's kind of going. So it was just, you're not at your home site, you know? Yeah. And you kind of forget some of the small little keys. And just to have someone like Will sit there and be like, hey, you just need to do this 1% better. You need to do that 1% better. Then it starts clicking again. And that's what pretty much after Morocco, when I wasn't being a TC, I wasn't worrying about anything except myself, that's when it started clicking, when Will actually sat down with me and was like, hey, dude, you can do this. You just need to do this and this a little bit better.
Sounds like that Inches speech that was in At Any Given Sunday. You watched that movie, I'm sure, enough times.
Yeah.
All right, then. So we're going to wrap up the podcast here at the TWBC podcast, as we're overlooking the Queenberry Lake, and we're even looking over our shoulders and seeing who's skiing. There's Ali Nicholson over there, and I'm sure you need to get your set in, so we'll let you go. But before you do, big shout-outs and acknowledgements.
Yeah, for sure. Team Syndicate, like always. HO Skis. My parents, Jack Travers, Leilani, Sunset Lakes. Touches Cover, Edge, my brother, my wife, my little boy. Thank you, guys.
All right, then. And that brings us to a conclusion, this edition of the TWBC podcast. And so from me, and until next time, this is Tony Lightfoot saying ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform, and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.